I'm Blake, and this is my Writings About Podcasts. So yes, I finally did it. After numerous people asking me to write a book about association podcasting, I did. It's geared towards mission-based organizations. In it, you'll learn how to set goals, record, strategize, and maintain a successful podcast for your organization. I base it off our three-step process that Human Factor uses to launch shows. It goes step-by-step on all the things you need to think about to see if a show is right for your organization. It's got almost no techno babble, and it's full of little tips we've picked up over the years to help your organization tell its story. So check it out at all major book distributors. And for more free information about podcasting, flash briefings, or to pick up your copy of Association Podcasting...
Spark Influence is a proud partner of the Advocacy Help Desk, providing advocacy tools, marketing software, and CRM for associations, corporations, and nonprofits looking to better their efforts. You find us at sparkinfluence.net.
Welcome to Advocacy Help Desk, where advocacy comes to learn, laugh, and make advocacy fun. Here are your hosts, Brian Fratkin and Andy Polk.
Welcome back to Advocacy Help Desk Show. As always, we are a group of innovators and advocacy experts who have been working in this field for many, many years and have created this show and advocacyhelpdesk.com, a resource center. To help those working in advocacy get a little bit better at the job. We can all get a little bit better. I believe that. And then these shows are really about trying to focus on different aspects of advocacy that we feel there's some skills that are lacking that we can help skill up a little bit on. And as always, when we're not doing these shows, people are emailing us on advocacyhelpdesk.com asking us to help with specific projects. And what we do is we take your ask and partner you with an expert to try to help solve your challenges for free. That's right. So while everybody else around town is charging for a lunch or something like that, you can download all our different videos on different topics on advocacyhelpdesk.com in the resource center for free.
I love it.
I'm honored as always. Thanks to Blake and Human Factor for helping us run our podcast and our video series.
Buy a book.
And to Brian Fracken with Spark Influence for helping run the platform and the website itself, and for also helping co-host. So Brian, what's
here we
the
are. All right. So today, so as part of the Advocacy Help Desk, what we do is to try to break down all of the various pieces of advocacy, right? And storytelling and data and CRM and augmented reality, all these different things. As part of that comes social media. And more than social media, though, is just connecting with people online. Let's just call it that, right? And so today, I am very happy to have in studio Erica here from LinkedIn to discuss basically sort of how do people use LinkedIn? What are the misconceptions that people have in advocacy about it? All of these great things that LinkedIn can help with these efforts that people may not know about. And where do we get started?
So what is LinkedIn again?
Well, we're kind of like Facebook, but for work.
Okay.
I'm told we are going to be big one day.
All right. I like that. Give us a little background, though. I know, you know, how what you've been doing at LinkedIn, what sort of your day-to-day looks like. Just give us a little sort of like a 1 to 2 minute background on you.
Absolutely. Well, Andy, Brian, thank you both so much for having me. I joined LinkedIn about 3 years ago, focused on working with advocacy organizations to better leverage LinkedIn to connect with the audiences that matter to them. And so when we think about who matters to people who work in advocacy, it's various different stakeholder audiences. Yep. So it's, in a lot of cases, your members or from a corporate perspective, your employees or your suppliers, the people who, you know, ultimately your customers too can be a stakeholder audience. And then the policymakers, and whether that is at the federal level, the state level, or the local level. All of those different audiences are really key to connect with. And we know that every policy pretty much has a real significant impact on business. And so when people think about why does LinkedIn make sense as an advocacy platform, we make sense because policy impacts business. Mm. And so as the professional network, as the platform for business, there's no better place to talk about how policy impacts business than LinkedIn.
I like that. I like that. I think that that's a really good point in terms of just why you would approach LinkedIn for these kind of things is, you know, there are different aspects to all of these different legislative issues, of course. And one of them is almost always, how does it expect business and how does it expect my job, right? As this person in this industry, how am I affected by this issue? And so I know Andy has a bunch of questions, but how do folks, what is a good example of just a simple sort of LinkedIn usage in this space?
So I think at the very basic, what you want to be doing as an advocacy organization is raising awareness about who you are, where you stand on these various issues, even before you're making an ask of anyone to do anything, whether it's to members or to industry to sign up for a grassroots program or to policymakers to vote a specific way on a piece of legislation. They've got to know the impact that your industry has on the economy. They've got to know what, you know, let's just take like automation. What does automation actually mean to jobs? What does it mean to, say, the trucking industry? We know that's going to have a huge impact there. So before the trucking industry goes and starts talking about, and I'm totally hypothetical, not putting words in ATA's mouth.
Yes.
But before they go and start asking for specific votes on legislation pertaining to autonomous vehicles, things like that, it'd be really helpful for the policymakers to understand the economic impact that the trucking industry has.
Sure.
Here.
I like that. I like that. And so, Andy, you were just talking about the three R's.
Yep.
Talk to me a little bit more about your thought there and where does LinkedIn come into that in that respect?
Well, I think, you know, as us representing shoe professionals across the industry, I think there's over 300,000 footwear workers in the U.S. And our database is really hard to manage from just an internal, you know, whether some people use Excel or there's some CRM or something like that. It's really hard to manage because there's so much flow happening. So people are constantly changing jobs. You know, they're constantly moving companies. They may leave footwear altogether. They may come into footwear from somewhere else. And it's really hard to manage internally having someone, you know, kind of data process that. And I've really found LinkedIn is a great tool to keep up with people who come into the industry from somewhere else, who leave the industry, who may come back or who shift jobs. And so in that instance, it becomes this really dynamic portal because LinkedIn provides me more professional information about what that person is and what they care about than our internal database stuff, right? So it's almost a live, living thing where you can track and trace. You know, Brian, we always talk about who our champions are, who actually are engaged, who are really passionate. So we want to find those people first and engage them and turn them on because we know that if we make an ask, they'll actually do something for us. But I think in that sense, it kind of cultivates a whole different kind of understanding of industry beyond what we can internally hold here. And it's very different than Twitter or a Facebook in the sense that it is about business and it is about industry and people are very comfortable talking about business and industry. And it's very interesting to me. And what I like about it is if someone says something social or somebody like wants to drop a joke, people pile on being like, this is a business platform. Like, please don't waste my time with, you know, show me pictures of your dog or something like that, right? So it's a very specific niche place for industry. And what we really use it for is, I think, like most associations, we send out emails and to our member companies. But we have started over the last year or so supplementing that kind of email campaign with LinkedIn posts, both from myself and our president. And every single day I try to post something very thoughtful to build my followers or to add something or make people think a little bit differently about what they're doing. And really it is about branding. It's about branding our association that people can trust us, that we're thought leaders in the space. And so we intertwine in business facts and figures and stats along with tariffs or with tax issues or regulatory issues. And so we kind of feed in. And I think the challenge for a lot of people in DC is, and we can discuss this, I think it's a good discussion point, is I don't think people appreciate and understand LinkedIn's potential to connect with industry and talk about those business topics. And then two, I don't think they're comfortable about delving into those topics. They're so focused on political language, regulatory issues, and you can kind of hear them still have that kind of, I call the DC acronym talk that they have. They don't really shift and change to a business talk, but they're not really trying to dive into those business issues to build that brand for the association so that you enlarge your reach and you enlarge the pool of people you can ask to take actions. And so I think that's why this, we're really talking about this today, is, you know, everybody knows Twitter and Facebook, but I think LinkedIn is a diamond in the rough in DC. And I don't think enough people are trying hard enough to figure out how to utilize it to grow their reach, grow their grassroots, find those champions in a different way that we've been talking about. So I don't know if you guys feel the same way or have seen it. But a lot of people I see in associations in DC post stuff, and it's not constant. And it's basically stuff they took from their email campaigns and added it in, which is okay. But I think it's a great platform for original content in many ways, to tell a different story and find different ways to get stories back at you and get comments that you can't get through emails.
So one thing that I'd love to call out that you kind of touched on, but to call attention to it, because I think it's a really underutilized kind of function of LinkedIn, is a lot of organizations will start actually kind of in the converse from you guys with their page as an organization. Sure. And they'll be posting from their page, and that's super important, and we recommend posting 1 to 2 times per day. We see tremendously more engagement when people are posting with that regular cadence. Where you guys have gone that I think there's still a lot of room for associations to grow is leveraging your senior leadership, leveraging not just your CEO, which is certainly important, but subject matter experts and senior leaders throughout the organization to be building their own network, posting from their own profiles, because everyone in this town, as we know, like, this is why DC is so small, is so well connected, right, that when you post or when you share your organization's content, it amplifies the reach significantly. Mm-hmm.
I like that, because I think that, so taking on what Andy is saying is so these associations really should get started with just not making an ask necessarily, but just being on LinkedIn, right? That's number one place that they should start. Mm-hmm. is just saying, look, I'm not here to ask you to do something. I'm here to show you that I understand the issues and that I can give you the content that you might be looking for in a professional sense, so you better understand. Is that what you're seeing sort of as a good first step?
Absolutely. And I feel very fortunate to work with associations, because having content to publish is never a problem.
Right.
So many of our corporate customers and segments that other parts of our business work with, they're challenged by, like, we don't have the content. Mm. Associations do pretty much nothing but publish content, whether it's newsletters, blog posts, podcasts,
sure,
videos, conferences. Like, there's so much rich content out there, let alone the independent research that many organizations do as well, that there's a constant stream of information that's right there to be put on LinkedIn.
Is there a certain type of content that works better than others, or is it mainly just finding the niche and trying different things?
Podcasts.
There it is.
It is. We do see podcasts work very well. We also see a lot of video.
Video.
Since we introduced video back in the fall of 2017.
Video streaming too now.
Video. Yeah, we are now in beta with LinkedIn Live, which is really exciting. Not in the advocacy realm, because they don't do advocacy, but the International Association of Privacy Professionals is one of our beta testers for that. And they've done a lot of really interesting live streams.
And so those videos, so for, in terms of times, where does the authenticity, sort of like the professional line end and sort of the personal line begin? Like, how do you instruct these groups to sort of balance that?
That's a great question. So the personal really is the professional.
Yes.
I think we in DC have a harder time than most separating personal and professional. But I think at the end of the day, there really isn't a whole lot of difference between who you are personally and who you are professionally. Now, in terms of what you put on LinkedIn, we kind of give the guidance of if you wouldn't do it in the office, don't do it on LinkedIn. Right. So there for sure is that line, and you know, things that you might post on Facebook or on your Instagram that doesn't belong on LinkedIn. Photos of your dog, unless you happen to work for the Veterinary Association.
Yes, exactly right. Yep.
You know, there's always an association that it will work for, but you get the idea. So I think getting to your point of authenticity, one of the things that I think we usually see associations be very afraid of is to be really authentic, to do a video shoot and not have two cameras and makeup. And it costs you, you know, anywhere from $5,000 to $15,000. Like, that's no small chunk of change to pull off a video. And so when people like me are giving you the advice of like, you should post a video every week, and you're like, ka-ching, ka-ching, like,
yeah,
that's,
yeah, yeah.
I can't feasibly do that. But in reality, a lot of the videos that we see that drive tremendous engagement are basically a video of like what we're doing right now, sitting around talking about the things that we know, the industry that we work in, the expertise that we've garnered over the last decade plus of work in this industry. So I called out IAPP. Like I said, they don't do any advocacy.
Sure.
But one of the most interesting videos that they did, it was about a 15-minute live stream of their CEO, Trevor Hughes, who also is just a phenomenal on LinkedIn. So definitely somebody worth following. And then one of their subject matter experts, the day after the FTC settlement with Facebook,
sure,
talking about like, what does this actually mean for the privacy industry?
Hmm.
And it was like them on a couch in t-shirts and shorts.
So you're saying everything that Andy has been saying to the DC market for a long time now. And so I can see him nodding his head in the background, and yeah. I want to ask him sort of, so Andy, I know one of your biggest videos that you shot was just you holding your iPhone like this, walking down the halls of Congress and then, yep, knocking on doors. Tell, yep, me a little bit more about what kind of response you saw on LinkedIn to that, like, this is me, I'm in Congress in my professional sense, but I'm also being supremely just authentic and relaxed being a professional.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in mistakes. So when I cut video, I don't usually edit. You can even ask Blake on our podcast that we do.
We don't edit.
One of the rules are we don't edit. And I think that's hugely important. And I think it's a challenge in DC because people pride themselves on having this like perfect persona or something like that, when actually in the real world, people are looking for people who are just authentic, just like they are. And ultimately are looking for, are they talking to me about issues I really care about? I don't care if he stuttered. I don't care if there was a misspeak or something like that, it's fine. And so I was on Capitol Hill and I was just doing some visits door to door, and I just decided to shoot a video and turned it around and filmed it for about 20 seconds and explained what I was doing on the Hill and why it was important and the response that I was getting. And I think I got, you know, 10 to 15,000 views on that and several hundred likes. And it did a couple of things. One, it just reinforced who we are as an association for people who, you know, who kind of know who we are but don't really know who we are and what we're doing and why we're doing it. So it reinforced that. But ultimately, it also, I think, you know, as a former communicator who worked on the Hill for many years, I'm a big believer if you don't promote it, and I'm not talking about self-promotion, but if you don't actually explain and show what you're doing every single day, then people don't know. And so it's a missed opportunity not to film something you're doing in your office as a collaboration, where you're sitting around and you're brainstorming on an event or how you're going to do strategy for Capitol Hill. Why not videotape it and have some people talk about it? Who cares? Post it up and see what you get.
Hey, Andy, remember the time we did the video, the live stream on LinkedIn?
Yeah.
I believe that was LinkedIn, wasn't it?
We did YouTube and LinkedIn at the same time.
Yep.
And had a huge audience that joined. And what I like about LinkedIn streaming is it puts it right up to the top of the queue. So if you're looking at profiles and looking through your feed, if someone's streaming live, it's right at the top and it's like, Andy Polk is live. So you just want to click on it because you're interested and you're like, what the hell is this guy going to say this time? You know? So in that sense, it's like that. But
remember, we gave him like, what, 10 minutes of like, we're going live?
Yeah, we only gave him 10 minutes notice and we still had 150 people join. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and it was because it was a topic of interest. And I think that's the key thing is, I'm a big believer in, you know, seeing something is the power of three in essence in communications. You see it three times. So you send out a marketing email and you hope people see it and it's educating them, or you're asking them to take an action to Congress in some way. To a certain extent, they have to see that three times. And I don't think you want to send three emails saying the same thing. Right. So we utilize other channels like LinkedIn to communicate with people who may not be in our database, or who may get an email and don't care. Maybe it goes into the junk, but for some reason they like LinkedIn and follow us and trust us. And so that allows us to find people and get people activated in a different way. And so I think it's a constant, I think people need to be less afraid of making mistakes, and they need to be more, you know, more willing to share about what they're working on and what they care about and what they're passionate about, and build a base and expand a little bit. And again, I think LinkedIn is very segmented. It's not a social platform like we think of these other platforms. I think it's a very specific business-focused platform where people are looking for real important content that impacts them. To Brian's point, how does this impact me? And associations are uniquely positioned to do that. And I just don't think that they're I guess the other thing too is, and I'll stop talking in a second, but I think the challenge is we all focus on starting with email campaigns, and then we take the content from the email campaign and copy it and paste it into another platform. And if you think your digital strategy starts that way, then my friends, you don't have a digital strategy at all, because each different platform is a different language, and it's a different focus, and it's a different segment that you have to work on. And I think LinkedIn, again, is a unique segment on business, and I think you tailor your stuff. Yeah, we all take our, you know, the ad we're doing for an event, we post it up there, and that's fine. But you can't just do that every single day. You got to supplement it with actual thought about what's happening and changing and shifting and updates. And I do think, and I'll say this one last thing too, is I think LinkedIn provides a unique opportunity, just like what was said, for association executives to stop writing emails or sending out a monthly written report about what's happening in DC, and just videotape live or videotape something and post it up about, here's our monthly report, and I'm just going to talk, and I'm going to share what I'm thinking. And you can ask questions in the comment boxes, and I'll engage with you after the fact or something
like
that.
Much like this video board here of Andy sitting in front of a wall and just doing these kind of things. So, all right, so let's talk a few things here. So what are we talking about? Where do associations get started with this? And what should they be thinking about at the top of mind to get things rolling? I don't want us to just sit down with the CEO or some senior leader and just say, let's do something, right? No, it's what are the things that I should be thinking about when I'm getting started?
Absolutely. So the first thing that any association wants to do, and the good news is that most associations have met this kind of bare minimum threshold, is to have a page.
Okay.
So create your page, make sure it's populated with information about the association, who you are, who you represent, what you do, what your issues are, that kind of stuff.
And even at the beginning there, use some of the content that you have elsewhere, even if it is to official speak.
Absolutely.
At the beginning, just to get something up.
Get something up and then start posting.
Yeah.
And we've seen, and part of this is because of the evolution of LinkedIn. You know, when most of us joined LinkedIn, we were probably pretty much just a parking lot online for your resume.
Like, sure.
That's for many, yes, many years, let's call it up until even the last 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That's what LinkedIn was. And I think a lot of people around town still kind of think of LinkedIn like that. But what we're seeing is just this tremendous shift to really being an online content destination. And so we actually, we run a survey of our members every month, big omnibus survey. And one of the questions we ask is, how much do you trust the information that you see on all these various platforms?
Sure.
And we ask not just us versus the other social networks, but we also ask against the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Forbes, CNBC.
Okay.
And what we've seen, we've been running this now every single month since January of 2017, is that people trust the information and the content that they see on LinkedIn on par with those major publishers.
Oh, wow.
More than double. Today, it's closer to more than triple that of the social networks.
Interesting.
So I think that when people whether that's policymakers, we know that from National Journal that LinkedIn is the most widely used social network in DC amongst policymakers and influencers for work. We know that that's true across business professionals broadly. But when people are coming to LinkedIn, they're coming looking for information on the trends that are happening in their industry. They're looking to keep up with experts. They're looking to connect with peers. It's all those different categories of content that really drive engagement. And so posting on those types of things is what's going to drive engagement. And we actually have this kind of like cheat sheet around, like, here's what you can very easily share.
Will you share that with us and we'll put it on our website?
Of course.
I love it.
So we kind of put it into a bunch of different categories. So one is share what you're reading. Like, that's okay. The easiest thing. People in this town spend so much time every single day reading stuff.
Yep.
Take the 2-sentence commentary that's in your head, put it on LinkedIn, share the article.
Just did it today.
There you go.
There it is.
See, easy. Like, how long did that take you?
I did it in like 2 minutes on the train on the way in.
Awesome.
I took an SEO story, I posted it, and then I added my comments on it.
And that's a great point. It doesn't have to be your own organization's content that you're commenting on. Mm-hmm. It certainly can be, but don't be afraid to share things from other organizations, media outlets, so sure. on and
Absolutely.
So forth. The second piece is when you're at conferences. People are really good at like snapping a picture from the audience of like, here's the, you know, I see the big projector. I can't read any of the words on screen, but yep. here's that, or like selfie, here's me at the conference. I think going that next level, one step further, and saying like, hey, I'm speaking on this conference today, like one key takeaway, here it is. Sneak peek. Gotcha. Here's one thing. So that you're not just sharing a picture of yourself, which feels a little bit more like, yay, Instagram, like just like this because sure. you like me.
Right.
But really share your knowledge, your insights. So take it like that one extra step further. We've seen some cool things being done, like either breaking news or debunking rumors. I think it was, am I going to get this right? Gonna hope so. I think it was Meg Whitman who debunked the rumor on LinkedIn, like, no, I am not taking over as the CEO of Uber.
Sure.
Like, heard
sure.
it here first, yep. not happening. So there's a lot of really interesting things that you can do. And I think for people who are just getting started, it can feel a little bit overwhelming of like, oh my gosh, where do I start? How do I find the time in my already busy day? So we like to make the suggestion, carve out 5 minutes. Actually put it on your calendar, 5 minutes a day that you're going to spend on LinkedIn, either posting content or going through your feed, liking, commenting, sharing other people's content.
Sure.
After a couple weeks, as we all know, it'll become a habit and you don't have to start blocking it off on your calendar. But I'm a big believer in not just in LinkedIn, but in anything that you want to be deliberate about doing, actually put the time on your calendar so that it buzzes at you and you're like, oh yes, I intended to do that.
Yep. Yep. I like that.
So I have a comment real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
A comment and then a question. I think what is said here is really important because on my LinkedIn feed, when I'm reading things, I find people in our industry who have been working, doing something really unique in our industry for 30 years. And I didn't know who they were simply because they maybe not have budget to attend an event, or maybe they're just not as plugged in, or maybe there's somebody who's not a member of ours, God forbid. But I find them, and if I find that they have really interesting posts, those are the people that I want to bring in on our podcasts. I want to have them speak at our events. And so when you have a platform that you trust and is on par with someone like the Wall Street Journal, the challenge with the Wall Street Journal is they're always going to go to the people who are always quoted, right? You're never going to find any interesting voice out there. And LinkedIn helps you find people in your industry that's speaking back to you, that are telling you things, if you're just willing to listen, that make you better and more aware of what's happening in the industry and how you can pull them in and use them to help amplify their voice in some ways.
I was going to say, Andy, you know, that's a really interesting point. One of the audiences that I didn't mention earlier that this town cares a whole heck of a lot about is reporters.
Yeah.
We know that media relations is a really key component of what associations do. And we're seeing there's a very interesting dynamic across social platforms. So we all know, and I would never dispute this, that reporters live on Twitter because that's where news breaks, especially given the current occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania. But what we see in how reporters are using LinkedIn is they're using it during that ideation phase. So they're using it to research the companies, the industries, the people that they cover, and find sources. We actually have a training program that we run for journalists, teaching them how to use and leverage LinkedIn, both for that research side, but also promoting their own stories. So we see a ton of that. We have an editorial team that's now over 60 people globally, creating and curating content on the platform. One of the things that they do every year is they name, I think last year was over 300, what we call top voices on LinkedIn. So people who are really driving engagement, driving conversation on the platform. And what was interesting is in the 2018 list, 10 of those top voices were reporters.
Oh, interesting.
So my real question is, I'm not a novice at LinkedIn. We talked a little bit about how you get started with it. I've been doing LinkedIn, and I've really tried to build my rapport with people, my own brand, and my own followers over the last year or so, really intently. But LinkedIn also has something really great on targeting, right? You can run ads, you can do targeting, you can do it by geographic area, you can do it by job description, you can do it by companies. So you can like narrow in really specifically. And I think, that's the other thing we could talk about is I'm not the best at doing this. And I think we've even talked about doing this for this show of how we do targeting on LinkedIn for Advocacy Help Desk to push these videos out. Maybe you guys can help us with some budget from that LinkedIn. But but the idea of, going in and saying, I'm going to segment my list by advocacy, grassroots, public affairs, et cetera, Washington, D.C. area, all of a sudden you've narrowed down a list of millions of people down to several thousand that you want to target and specifically talk to. And I think that's hugely important too, is because we always talk internally about our databases, about how we need to segment and organize all those databases. But LinkedIn has this unique platform that can find people that aren't in our, again, aren't in our databases, but we can connect with and narrow that down. Maybe just talk a little bit about that, because I could specifically learn how to be much better at that and be more prolific at running ads, targeting specific people or specific issues to find new people.
Advanced strategies.
Yeah, are people in advocacy really using that to the full extent, or is it just kind of brands using that to sell product or something?
Both and. Though certainly, and this is where you sit is where you stand, we would love to see more organizations using it for advocacy. What's interesting, just going back to the content briefly, a lot of our senior leadership has actually talked about how they would like to see more discussion of policy on the platform.
Interesting.
We've always said, and this is kind of particularly important going into 2020, like we are not the place for politics. We actually do not take political advertising. We'll actually be like a lovely respite from the rest of the world that we're all about to start getting bombarded with political ads everywhere we go. But there is a craving and a belief in the value of policy discussions on the platform, which I think is really important. To your question on targeting, if you think about your own profile, pretty much every piece of information that you've put on your profile becomes a targetable piece of data for us. So thank you in advance for keeping your profiles up to date. To start thinking about like some concrete examples. So for this podcast, how would we go about targeting people who work on advocacy, who work in government relations? We have a lot of different job titles. We work in a lot of different industries. We, for the most part, work in DC, but really we work across the country, especially when we start talking at state and local level. So in this case, what we would do is use skills. So the skills on people's profiles, the keywords throughout their profiles can be targeted. We have a number of skills related to policy and different types of policy. So health policy, tax policy, education reform, so on and so forth. But then also the more general, like government relations, grassroots, advocacy, things like that.
So keeping it, so first steps, as you said, is getting set up online and being a destination and then starting to share the content, both in an authentic manner, but then also obviously what you have in your newsletter. Sure, if you're just getting off the ground, do something with that. But next steps then we're talking about, how do we get people to the page? And this is where we're talking about in terms of what they've shared with LinkedIn in terms of their skills and what their interests are and what groups they belong to are now the things that we can look for to get people to drive to the different promoted sort of posts that we've put up there to get them to start to understand who we are.
Exactly. And when we look at a page's followers, typically what we see is that the followers are really reflective of your biggest fans. They're sure. The people who already love you. Mm-hmm. So where we want to be using the paid is to reach the people who don't already love you. Or who may not follow you. So like journalists, very unlikely to follow a page. Sure. Policymakers, very unlikely to follow a page. When we look at most associations, most of the followers typically fall within the industry. So we're like, okay, not surprising, your members are the ones who follow you. Mm-hmm. But it's always also a subset of your members. So how can we use the paid and the really powerful first party business demographic targeting that we have to reach the people who you can't engage in an organic way?
And those would be then, as Andy said, sort of the potential experts in the arena who either may not know about us or haven't had money to come to these events. So it's both within and without. It's both the folks that we know we're looking for because they fit a certain type, but may not follow us. But then it's, as you said, the reporters, the policymakers, and others who we want to see this. So it's sort of two different ways of thinking about it.
Mm-hmm. And I think one thing that's really interesting for organizations, Andy, like yours, where you're a trade, you know, you're in a position where you've got this breadth of member companies, but my guess is that you've got, you know, in general, let's call it like half a dozen or so contacts at each member company that you're really reliant on to get that information out to their employees. Am I making a fair assumption there?
Yep.
So what we can do from a paid perspective is to target employees of all your member companies. Mm. So you're not having to rely on those half a dozen or so folks to tell that message for you. You're not reliant on them to communicate the benefits of the association or what you're doing on behalf of the industry. Right. So it's a real way to go direct to members. In a lot of cases, employees of those member companies likely don't even know that they're members of association.
That's very true.
I like it. Andy, parting shots.
I'm a big believer in LinkedIn, and that's why we did this episode on this, because I feel like our growth as an association can be tied in many ways to our performance on LinkedIn and finding people within the organization. I think as an association, not just in advocacy, but in terms of making sure you have growth, as we said, you know, you typically have a dozen contacts that are fighting to make sure they pay association dues every year. And if you're really strategic, what you're trying to do is create breadth and add new companies. But if you don't add the depth at the same time and have a list of 100 people inside fighting in different departments, you could see your membership decrease. And so LinkedIn for that purpose is also really great beyond just advocacy, but for having a well-rounded financial health of the association to keep doing your job better. I just think people out there who are doing grassroots are not using it to its full potential to target better, to add to, you know, the marketing campaigns on at events when we talk about advocacy or through our email campaigns. But if you're not doing LinkedIn, you're doing yourself a disservice to find new folks, engage new folks, and increase your advocacy, because I think LinkedIn really is about quality, where other platforms are very much about quantity, both in terms of putting content out, but also in terms of trying to find as many people as possible, when we should be using LinkedIn to segment and target quality people. And that's my parting shot.
I love it. Well, Erica, thank you for joining us today.
Yes,
this is the Advocacy Help Desk, sponsored by humanfactor.net. Please look up the association podcasting book that I'm looking at in the corner over here. Blake literally wrote the book on podcasting.
Thank you.
And sponsored by sparkinfluence.net. We are the platform that helps your advocacy organization. The award-winning platform. Helps your advocacy association on understanding your people so that you can then reach them, leverage them, and do more with them. That is what we do best. Look us up at sparkinfluence.net. Erica, thank you again for joining us today. As you can tell, this was not a commercial for LinkedIn. However, it has amazing potential in the advocacy space that we wanted to break down for you today.
Although when you film our next commercial, I'm gonna
bringing us all in. Let's do this. Absolutely.
Well, thank you for having me.
You still have to knuckle in and do the work on LinkedIn.
That's right.
We've expounded upon the values and the benefits of it, but you still got to do the work every single day.
That's right.
Do the work.
But if you do the work every single day and you knuckle in and do it, you have a platform that can really get you greater results than other platforms.
I'm doing the baby steps. I'm doing the work. I'm not a slacker.
Blake, you're not posting enough, my friend. I'm going to get on you.
Erica's going to come in there and talking to you about it.
Set up on there, right?
All right.
All right, guys.
Folks, thanks as always for joining AppDHelpDesk.com. You see our full menu of the shows. Drop us a line if we can give you help. We appreciate you listening. And for Brian and Blake, this is AppDHelpDesk, and we are out.